Inside job. It took Tricia and Jim Jr. roughly an hour to hoof it from Pearl Road to the back door of the brown house on Possum Hollow. It might have taken them longer. The shoe she found in the closet of their prison slowed them down until she decided to cast them aside and go barefoot. As they approached the house, Tricia slowed down her pace and indicated to Jimmy that he should be quiet. There was a commotion going on outside of the house on the front porch.
"I told you I'm her youngest brother. I'm Timmy. I come to see her, old man. Now let me in."
Earl was heard arguing with Tim and another man claiming to be an attorney.
"That's the other one," Jimmy whispered. "Sounds like the one who sprung me and got me here."
Gilbert Ross. Boy, would I just love shooting that son of a bitch, Tricia thought. Her hand wandered toward the purloined Glock. Tricia started to creep to the side of the house to see if she could get a good look at the men. Before she could move, the back door opened. Sally crept out, trying to escape what was going on in front of the house. She glanced at Jimmy, then at Tricia, clamping her mouth shut. She motioned for them to follow her back up the trail. When they got to the parallel path, she headed east, ending up in another neighbor's back porch.
"That there fellow who says he's the lawyer," she said out of breath, "he's that Gilbert Ross fellow. I knows it."
"Are you sure about that?" Tricia asked.
"I never forget a face. Ain't that right, Jimmy?"
Sally knocked on the back door. Getting no answer, she walked right into the house. "No one locks the doors round here," she informed the other fugitives. "Let's find the phone and call the law." Tricia found a dial phone on the wall while Sally went in search of an available pack of cigarettes. She dialed Ray's cell phone, which was answered by a very annoyed sheriff.
"I don't know who you are, but you need to forget dialing this number ever again," he threatened.
"Roy, it's me, Tricia Michaels. There's trouble up here at Possum Hollow. We need you here now."
Roy took a moment before reacting to Tricia's plea.
"Jesus H. Christ, woman, what the hell is going on?" he demanded. "I got half the county looking for you up near Jumpstart."
"You wouldn't happen to be looking near Turkey Run General Store, would you?"
"Well, that's where they found your tote and your papers," Roy told her, "along with Andy James. He was hanging from a crossbeam when Tim McFarland found him last night."
Tim McFarland is in Possum Hollow right now at Sally and Earl's, along with Gilbert Ross, Tricia explained. "Sally, her brother Jimmy, and I are a few doors up. We need some help out here to round up a few folks." She quickly gave him an overview of what was going on at that very moment. Inside of 3 minutes, Roy came up with a plan.
"You three stay exactly where you are," he said. "I'll be down with whoever I can round up as soon as I can manage it. If you do have to leave, make it to the church up by the cemetery."
When Tricia hung up, Sally and Jimmy were talking back and forth to each other as if they'd never only seen each other the day before. Tricia hated to interrupt.
"Who lives here?" she asked Sally.
"Well, this is Paul Rhodes' place. He ain't here now."
"Well, I know that. Do you know if he has any guns, shotguns, rifles?"
"Well, everyone here in the holler has something to shoot varmints with," Sally assured her. "He has deer guns he keeps in the closet in the bedroom."
Tricia left the siblings alone while she searched the absent owner's closet, finding a totally suitable rifle with an ample supply of ammunition. She took it back to the kitchen, loaded it, and handed it to Sally.
"I'm going to go out to guard the trail by the parallel in case they decide to come back in this direction," Tricia told them. "Sally, you take this as a backup."
"Well, what makes you think they'll take the trail?" Jimmy asked.
"When they find me gone, they'll figure out that I went out the back," Sally told him. "Listen to the woman. She has some smarts to her."
Tricia crept out of the cabin, listening carefully while making her way to the main trunk of Reed's trail. She backed off about 50 feet when she arrived, barely finding cover when she heard voices coming up the trail.
"I'm telling you, she went down to see Fred Granger about an hour ago. I was waiting for her to come back and pick her up."
"You're a lying son of a bitch," she heard Gilbert Ross say. "Seely told me so himself."
"You're lucky that interfering bitch Michaels got him put in the hospital," Tim added. "Otherwise you'd be bleeding pretty bad by now."
They continued their walk up the trail, noisily threatening each other almost every step of the way. It's only a matter of time before they discover we're missing, she thought.
I wish I had my phone so I could find out how fast Roy will be here. Carefully, she vacated her post, running back to the house. It's only going to be a matter of time before they decide to head in this direction, she so told the other two. We need to keep a sharp lookout. Where's Earl? Sally asked. Well, he's with Tim and Gilbert Ross. He's still alive for the time being, but knowing what happened to me, I can only wonder for how much longer. Sheriff called here half a minute ago, Jimmy reported. He said that he and some other deputies from Jackson are on silent approach and should be in place inside of 15 minutes. That could be a lifetime, Tricia sighed. She decided that the best thing that they could do was to leave the house and hide outside. They found a depression roughly 50 feet from the house where they could watch and wait. They didn't have to wait long. Gilbert Ross's voice came booming up the trail.
Miss Michaels, I know you're out here somewhere. We need to talk. Meet me on the trail in 5 minutes.
Gilbert Ross repeated his announcement twice more. Then silence. 5 minutes later, he called out again.
This your final warning, Mrs. Michaels. Tim will kill Earl in 2 minutes if you don't show yourself right now.
Tricia spotted Gilbert Ross coming toward the house where they had earlier sought refuge. Sally leveled the rifle she had borrowed from the house, took aim, and shot Gilbert in the shoulder.
You killed my mama, you son of a bitch, she shouted.
He started to aim his firearm in Sally's direction. Before he could get his bearings, Sally shot him a second time, hitting him right in the knee. He fell, screaming in pain and cursing a blue streak. Tim stood with his jaw wide open, but only for a moment. When he started to run, Earl tripped him, sending him face first into the dirt. A quick bark of a siren announced the arrival of a sheriff's deputy at the front of the house. Call an ambulance, Tricia barked to the first officer on the scene. Sally kept Tim under cover while Tricia managed to get Jim Jr. to help her put on a tourniquet on Gilbert Ross's leg. Less than a minute after the gunfire erupted, Sheriff Roy handcuffed Tim and had taken him away to Fuller County Jail by one of his deputies. It wasn't long before the ambulance arrived. Paramedics rushed Gilbert Ross to the hospital in Jackson only because it was closer. Jimmy went with them when it was suggested that it wouldn't be a bad idea for him to be checked over by a doctor after his ordeal. Once the squad left, Sally and Earl embraced each other for a solid minute before Sally asked him if he had any cigarettes. One of the highway patrolmen who came to the scene took statements from them before putting them back into his car to take him back down the hollow to the Brown home.
Does Glenn know I'm safe? Tricia asked when she finally had a moment with Roy.
I called him the first thing after you called me, he told her. He stayed home instead of doing the show this morning. Mulligan's doing it instead. Your buddy Helk is headed out here with him. They should be here any minute. While they waited for Glenn, Roy filled Tricia in on the manhunt on Turkey Run. McFarland here called us out to the general store at Turkey Run, reporting that Ray Poe had hanged himself. When I got out there with Deputy Frost and the coroner, we noticed your bag, your cell phone, and a bunch of papers at the crime scene. Philip Farmer showed up just after we got there, bringing a little crowd with him. He said something about Jim Brown Jr. being on the loose from prison and come to the conclusion that it looked like you might have interrupted a robbery in progress, and he most likely took you as a hostage. Something didn't seem quite right, Roy continued. The coroner and I took the body down, examined it, and figured that the victim had been garroted before he was strung up. It was easy to look for once you told me what to look for. You're welcome, Tricia smiled. I'm sorry to say that Ray was most likely dead when I got to the store yesterday afternoon. I was confronted by Philip Farmer and Sheriff Hill when David and I got back to the back of the store. David escaped. I was taken from behind and knocked unconscious. I suspect that in a slightly different situation, I could have been a victim too. Tricia told the sheriff about her waking up in the trunk of her rental car and the plans which had been made for her. So, the Ross brothers are still active, albeit in a new generation, eh? Roy remarked after she finished telling him what she had been through. It would seem so, she said. It also appears as if Philip Farmer is in their pocket. If he becomes sheriff, the reign of terror is back. Well, he's organized a posse, and they are, right now, looking for your body out in the western portion of the county. Well, I take it that Sheriff Hill's involved, too, she asked. Roy nodded. You know that David Brown, Hoke, and David's father are hiding up in a place on Turkey Run Road, right?
You mean that Jim Brown Sr. is still alive?
Yep, she confirmed. I suppose they would have gone somewhere else after I was taken.
You're probably right, but where?
After pondering for a short time, Tricia smiled at Roy.
I think I know, she told him. When Glenn gets here, I'm going to go see for myself.
Under their noses. Glenn was in no shape to drive, he admitted later. That's why, when he arrived at the Rhodes house, Pastor Dan Stevens was driving him. The reunion was tearful but brief. There is work to be done.
We need to go up to the farm at the top of the hollow, Tricia told him. I don't believe that place is as abandoned as it looks.
Well, it takes us just a minute to run us up there in a squad car, Roy offered.
I need to go up there alone, Tricia told him. If you wait up at the cemetery, I'll let you know when you come and get me.
I'm going with you, Glenn said flat out.
Where you go, I go, Tricia agreed.
Tricia handed the gun she had carried with her from the place where she had been imprisoned over to Sheriff Roy for safekeeping. She and Glenn then went out the path from the back door to the front of Reed's trail. When they were about 50 yards from the old farm, she noticed a freshly extinguished cigarette butt on the trail. They weren't alone on their quest. The main barn door was slightly ajar, not shut as Tricia remembered it when she first came up the trail. She sensed a pair of eyes watching them when they approached.
Rumors of your demise are premature, David Brown stated when they got to the door. He opened the door to reveal a small circle of people huddled around a kerosene heater who seemed to be waiting for Tricia and Glenn. Aside from David, Hoke and Earl were there. Sally was snuggled in the arms of her father.
It's not much, but at least we're safe for the time being, David told him. It's also the last place that those bastards would look.
I figured as much, Tricia stated, matter of fact. Roy's waiting at the cemetery. We can arrange for protective custody until Russell's men are rounded up, if you'd like.
We'll be just fine. We have another place to lay low from Russell's men. We're just waiting for nightfall, David replied. Granger's barn is a lot cozier than this place and a lot less vulnerable.
He turned to Glenn, filled him in on what was going on. Hoke and Earl added some tidbits here and there. When they were finished, Jim Sr. and Sally joined in the conversation.
You're that fellow who took over for Zeke, aren't you? Jim said when he was introduced to Glenn. You look nothing like you sound on the radio.
Thanks, I think, Glenn sputtered. You don't look so bad yourself for someone who's supposed to have been missing for as long as you have.
Well, I've only been missing as far as both sides of the law are concerned. Most of the family knows where I've been all along.
The smiles on David and Sally's faces confirmed what their father just said.
The only one I didn't know I was alive was Timmy. He was the bad seed, he was. He killed Evan out of spite and made it look like a suicide.
The others nodded in agreement.
Like Ray Poe out at the store, Tricia said.
Yep, garroted him and then hung the body, Jim confirmed. From what I hear, he's been on a killing spree. I think this fellow farmer's been putting him up to it.
And blaming you all while he was at it, Tricia concluded.
Exactly, David said.
He won't be a problem for too much longer now that he's on his way to...
Tricia's comment drifted off when she came to an epiphany.
They had to have cell phones, she blurted out. If Tim and Gilbert Ross had cell phones, and I'm sure that they did, then they could well have tipped off Phil Farmer and the posse on the other end of the county, and they could well be here at any moment.
They'll head here, David said. They know what's hidden here as well as we do.
What? Tricia asked.
My mother, David said.
The others nodded in agreement, while David headed over to a door to be a lookout. He quickly returned.
Kill the heater and hide it. We have company, he hissed.
There was a flurry of activity while the Brown clan hid the heater and other evidence of their occupation was removed. They hid and waited for their unwanted visitors.
Philip Farmer strode through the barn door, brash and brazen. When his eyes adjusted to the dim light of the barn, he saw Tricia and Glenn Michaels standing 10 feet in front of him, their arms crossing their chest, their feet planted in defiance.
You're alive. That's good, Farmer stated. Now, both of you turn around and put your hands behind your backs. I'm placing you both under arrest for the murder of Ray Poe over at Turkey Run. His demand was reinforced by the appearance of Sheriff Hill behind him. You have no authority to arrest anyone, sir. Tricia stood her ground. And as for you, Mr. Hill, you are out of your jurisdiction. I could shoot you for resisting arrest, Hill snarled, and with you being the prime suspect in at least two murders, I have every right to pursue you over county lines. There are eyes watching us right now, Tricia informed Sheriff Hill. There is enough firepower to take you down where you stand right this moment. Tricia knew she could count on the eyes. She wasn't quite sure of the firepower. She was bluffing. Maybe there is and maybe there isn't, Philip Farmer said, putting his guns back in their holsters. Maybe a little pepper spray will convince you to come outside peacefully. As if on cue, Sheriff Hill pulled a can of pepper spray out of his belt and handed it to Philip Farmer. They both casually backed up. Just before reaching the door, Farmer pulled out a lighter out of his pocket, lit it, then using the pepper spray, created a makeshift blowtorch, aiming the flames toward a hay bale. Almost immediately, the bale caught fire. Tricia watched in horror while Sheriff Hill and Philip Farmer left the barn to presumably wait for the occupants to tumble out into their arms. Phoenix. Patricia Michaels' worst fears were realized. The one thing she was most afraid of was fire. She had a friend, Morgan, a playmate from the time she was in kindergarten until the end of the third grade. Morgan lived in a trailer 3 miles out of Jumpstart. Patricia and Morgan would alternate play dates with each other's houses until the fire. The county fire marshal determined that the cause of the fire was faulty wiring. Copper and aluminum had been combined when the house was built, causing heat which erupted in a blaze which destroyed the home. Morgan was trapped in a bedroom. She never made it out. Now it was Tricia's turn to follow Morgan into a fiery demise. The fire was set deliberately in between her and her chance to escape. She stood frozen, awaiting her fate. "I love you," she whispered to her husband. He was trying to pull her arm, trying to get her to come with him to safety. "This way! This way!" a voice urged them. Shots were fired from the back of the barn, aimed toward the arsonists. Tricia wished that one of the bullets would hit her, sparing her from incineration. Glenn yanked at her again. This time she woke up from the nightmare happening in front of her. There was hope. She saw the opening off to one side. It was a passageway for the animals. The other occupants of the barn were making for it. The opening was narrow and muddy due to recent showers, but it was an escape. She and Glenn were the last ones out. The ado exploded around the refugees from the barn. The bark of sirens came from multiple directions, presaging the arrival of the highway patrol and the sheriff's deputies from both Fuller and Jackson counties. Sheriff Hill and Philip Farmer were in the middle of everything, urging the new arrivals to help him. "There are people trapped inside," Sheriff Hill urged one of the patrolmen. "There were," the officer. "We're safe, no thanks to these two," Tricia said, marching up to Hill, Farmer, and a trio of patrolmen who were with them. We witnessed Sheriff Eric Hill and this man, Philip Farmer, deliberately set this fire, attempting to murder my husband, several members of the Brown family, and me. Sheriff Roy Ball knows that I was their target." "The woman's lying," Sheriff Hill protested. "Everyone knows she can't be trusted. Neither can Roy Ball. I try to help out these people, and this is the thanks I get? Well, fuck you. I'm out of here." Before Sheriff Hill could stalk back to his car, one of the patrolmen stopped him. "If it's all the same to you, I'd rather you stick around for a little bit," the patrolman insisted. The sheriff shot the patrolman a look of disgust. Before he could take 3 steps, he was surrounded and handcuffed by 2 of the other officers. In the confusion, Philip Farmer tried to escape down Reed's Trail. His flight was interrupted by a former 2-year captain of the Magnolia Marauders and current pastor of the Magnolia Community Church, Dan Stevens. "Just come to see if you're all right," Dan remarked. "I was just a little confused by seeing Mr. Farmer running away." Dan revealed that he had called in the extra lawman while he was waiting for Tricia and Glenn to get back from the barn. "When I saw those snakes driving up the hollow, I knew something was up," Dan told them. "I figured that the Lord probably had his hands full already, so I called for a backup." He looked at the barn, now fully engulfed in flames, and poked Glenn in the ribs. "That looks like a real barn burner tonight, eh, Glenn?" Glenn and Dan burst into inexplicable laughter. Glenn later told Tricia about a sportscaster he once worked with who had used the barn burner phrase on a regular basis. The volunteer fire department arrived too late to save the building, but they did manage to keep the fire contained to just the barn. That night, there was a constant parade of local onlookers going up and down Possum Hollow to see what all the ruckus was about. Before the flames were extinguished, the area was cordoned off as a crime scene. Tricia rode back to Zeke's with Dan and Glenn before riding back home with her husband. The day's events would have to be unwound in the morning. The remains of the barn at the head of Possum Hollow were still smoldering when Tricia and Glenn arrived to open Zeke's the next morning. Just after 7, Fred Granger arrived with Kitty, David Brown, Sally, Jim Sr., and Jim Jr. Tricia cleared the family table while Glenn did a segment with his newsman, Gene Minnie, telling exactly what had happened the previous afternoon. Roy came in just after Glenn finished. Quentin and Hoke were with him. Mom and me are heading back to Highland County later this morning, and we're taking Dad with us, Hoke told the group. Roy explained that any charges against Quentin Russell would most likely be dropped, pending examination of some papers I understand that are in your possession, Mrs. Michaels. I see no reason why we should be holding Mr. King here in our county jail. The people in the family table nodded in agreement. By the way, Roy continued, I got a call this morning from the FBI. I understand that my opponent in the upcoming election is a target of a racketeering investigation. I suppose that the Board of Elections will nullify any votes he'll get next Tuesday. Once Roy left, taking a large coffee to go, conversation was hot and heavy around the family table. Tricia tried to keep track on a napkin, but instead asked everyone for separate interviews at some point in the next several weeks. She's part of the foundation, you know, Jim Brown Sr. remarked to Tricia after the issue of separate interviews was settled. It took Tricia just a moment to understand that the senior Jim Brown was talking about his wife. They sealed her up in concrete at the barn this morning that she was killed, he explained. I'd appreciate it if you'd have the sheriff dig her up. She needs a proper burial. Fallout. The weeks between the end of October and Thanksgiving were extremely busy in Possum Hollow. There was a careful excavation of the burnt-out barn on Rattlesnake Ridge, which yielded human remains later to be confirmed as belonging to Nadine Brown. Joseph, Joey Fay Ross, a resident in a nursing home outside of Vanceboro, Kentucky, was indicted by a grand jury for causing her death. He was not brought to trial due to ill health. Gilbert Ross was named in the same indictment as an accessory to the murder of Nadine Brown. That indictment was minor in comparison to the crimes he was accused of in papers collected by Quentin Russell. After the doctors removed the leg shot in the confrontation in Possum Hollow, he went into custody pending several investigations into his actions. He was killed by a fellow inmate while awaiting trial. His killer cited revenge as a motive. Sheriff Hill returned to Highland County hoping that his involvement with the Ross family had not been noticed. Social media quickly squashed his hopes of re-election. His defeat in the polls was followed by numerous indictments in several counties for overstepping his bounds on several occasions. Will Seeley returned to Fuller County just before Christmas. He contacted the county's attorney in hopes that he could avoid prosecution for his role in various crimes committed under the guise of being one of Russell's men. His testimony helped to indict and convict Tim McFarland in a series of murders where the victims were found to have been garroted. For his testimony, Deputy Seeley was granted immunity from prosecution with the understanding that he was not to seek employment as a law enforcement officer ever again. He moved away from Fuller County, presumably into hiding from various victims looking for retribution. Sally Brown returned to her house in Possum Hollow. She died suddenly of a major stroke in the spring. Earl passed shortly after she did, of a broken heart. David, his father, and his brother Jim had the house on Possum Hollow bulldozed before building a new house on the same lot. Tricia spent 3 months organizing the information she had collected to write a series of articles under the overall title, The Secret of Possum Hollow. The series of articles she sold to newspapers in Ohio and Kentucky caught the attention of a national magazine, which published her story in its entirety almost a year after Trisha first ran into Nadine Brown at the Possum Hollow Cemetery. On the anniversary, October 5th, Trisha and Glenn decided to take a drive up to Possum Hollow to pay their respects. She decided to drive up on Rattlesnake Ridge by way of Pearl Road to pause for a few moments to see Mary and John. The house where she was imprisoned was torn down, and a new house had been built on the site. She wasn't at home. A different face appeared in the doorway, informing Trisha that the former resident moved without leaving a forwarding address. Trisha and Glenn continued on to Possum Hollow Cemetery to find the remainder of the Brown family and perhaps a score of their neighbors holding vigil at the Brown's family plot. "Nothing like standing in front of your own tombstone," Jim Brown remarked when they arrived. "I suppose it'd be like reading your own obituary." "I suppose it would be at that," Trisha remarked. After a few minutes of standing silence, Trisha noticed a pair of women off to one side with Jim Jr. "That's Rose and Francis," David told her. "This is the first time I've seen them since..." Trisha understood. She also understood Jim Jr. standing close to his surviving sisters, clasping their hands. They needed each other to help heal the hurt in their lives. When the mourners broke up, the group went down to the new house on Possum Hollow. There was dinner, followed by a circle of friends and family gathered at the hearth, remembering better times and hoping for better times to come. On the way home, Trisha was in a wistful mood. "Have you heard from Hannah's sister, Laura, lately?" she asked her husband. "Well, she called me at work the other day to let me know she'd be coming through on her way to a dance in Jackson here in a couple of weeks," he stated. "We're going to go up to see Hannah's grave when she and her husband are here." Trisha smiled. "How's your friend April doing?" he asked when a few miles further down the road. "And she sold her house and is moving back to the place where she lived over in Jumpstart," Trisha stated. "I don't know if it's a good idea or not, but J-Bo over at the Mental Health Center seems to think it'll do her a world of good." "Well, I'm sure you'll be over at her place a time or two yourself," Glenn smiled. The night was clear and cool, as it would be often during the first week of October. When Trisha and Glenn arrived home, they immediately headed for the hot tub on their back porch. They sat, counting the stars, and wondering if there would ever be enough stars to equal the number of blessings that they had in their lives.